Real Talk Real Muslims is a podcast by two young Muslims who talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of life as a young Muslim today.
Welcome back to Real Talk Real Muslims, a podcast where we share our experiences as first-generation American Muslims and where we aim to connect with other young Muslims to let them know that they are not alone in their struggles. This is Rawana.
And this is Rand. Welcome to the first episode of 2021 and episode number one of season two of Real Talk Real Muslim. And as always, we're super excited that you guys are continuing to join us on our podcast journey and to see where this will take us. We're super excited for everything that's coming up on season two, and we really hope that you guys are also excited for it, and we also hope that you like everything that we are planning for this season. So just stay tuned for all the new updates and episodes. And before we get right into today's episode with Dr. Nahla, we just wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about this episode. So we recorded this episode a while back with Dr. Nahla, and we were waiting for the right time to release it. And we just thought, what's the better time to release this episode than, you know, at the start of the new year, where we can like really implement these things in our everyday life throughout this year and really make a change this year. And we talked about so many topics, going from setting boundaries and the importance of them and how to do them properly. And we talked about the journey to self-love without the social media cliches. We talked about red flags from men and women in either a romantic relationship or just like a friendship and all that, and how to really handle situations like that. And we just talked about so many things, and the whole time during this episode, I was just like really dumbfounded and trying to like take in as much of it. And honestly, after we recorded this episode, I started implementing a lot of the things that we talked about in my own life, and it really did make a difference. Especially towards the end of this episode, I was talking about how after Dr. Nahla talked about the journey to self-love, I was like, you know, like I don't do a bunch of these things. So I went back, listened to the episode, and started implementing these things to my life. And when I tell you that it was super helpful and it really made a difference in my life, I'm being 100% with you guys. So I really hope that this episode has the same effect on you all as well, and that you all really benefit from it as well. So let's get right into it.
So thank you so much, Nahla, for joining us once again on our podcast. We really enjoyed having you as a guest on our Taboo series, and we're very excited to have you back today to talk about setting boundaries.
I'm very excited. Thank you guys for having me again.
So to start off, can you just kind of give us like a general overview of what exactly setting boundaries means, and what does that look like in a day-to-day setting?
Yeah, so it is very difficult to generalize this concept because there's so many examples and places where you can apply boundaries. But in a general sense, setting boundaries looks like really loving ourselves, even if we risk disappointing other people. So it looks like saying no sometimes. It looks like recognizing when you're being drained or burnt out or close to feeling drained or burnt out. It means drawing lines on how you wish to be treated and how you don't wish to be treated. And it means not accepting less than that as well. So creating consequences for those, having boundaries crossed. So in general, to me, it means valuing your time, and yourself, and loving yourself. What does it look like for people? It looks probably different for everybody, which is like my least favorite answer for something. I hate when people respond with, it depends, or it's different for everybody, but it's true. It really is different for everybody. So we'll talk about examples, I guess, in the podcast.
And especially because we don't talk about, you know, setting boundaries just like so, oh my God, in our communities, because, you know, people might perceive it as selfish or whatever. But I guess we'll talk about like how to set healthy boundaries in all our relationships, whether it's a romantic relationship, like friendships, and with family members. So I guess we want to start with talking about how to set boundaries in romantic relationships and talk a little bit about red flags that we can see before we get into the relationship or while we're in the relationship from Muslim men or, you know, your partner.
Yeah, I love that you guys have this question on here on the podcast, because this is where a lot of where my boundary setting had come from being in a relationship that was really toxic and abusive. So the concept of like red flags from Muslim men, I think it could be generalized to anyone. So Muslim men, Muslim women, anyone in general. Like, I don't think that maybe this is my opinion, but I don't think that Muslim men are generally more toxic or more inclined to be abusive than any person. So there are traits that you can find in any person, really, that that are red flags or that are either like abusive or toxic. So first thing is, this is so close to me that I'm speaking a little bit from experience, but also from like generally speaking to other people. But when you are in a, I guess, in a quote unquote halal relationship or in a relationship as a Muslim in our community, in our world, a lot of the time, what you have to do is be a little bit more secret and a little bit more private. So not sharing either the relationship itself or not having people know about it, but not being able to share details about it. And especially not being able to share the bad, the concerning, the hurtful behaviors that you may be experiencing in that relationship. So I think the danger of relationships in Islam, not necessarily about Muslim men or Muslim women, but like in our general society, is that we don't feel comfortable talking about relationships as much in general at a baseline. And then on top of that, add the fact that we don't even feel comfortable talking about the bad things or the things that just make us feel a little bit like, I don't know if that was right. I don't know how I feel about this. So the first thing first is talk about it. If something ignites some sort of emotion in you of discomfort or feeling awkward, feeling like that wasn't right or that shouldn't have been acceptable or I shouldn't have let that happen or I can't believe that just happened, whatever the narrative, the dialogue is happening in your brain, talk about it. So this could be whether your partner did something, said something, or didn't do something or didn't say something. So even actions, actions are obviously very obvious, but omissions, like not doing something, is also an action too. And it can make you feel uncomfortable. So share this with somebody. So for me, I did not feel comfortable sharing what happened to me. I did not feel comfortable talking about the things that made me feel really bad about myself. You know, I could see my self-worth and my self-esteem basically crumbling. I could watch myself go through this really abusive relationship, but I couldn't identify what was going on. And if I had just opened up a little bit earlier, if I had just spoke to my friends who are great friends, they're trustworthy, they're people that I talk to about everything else, but about this particular thing, I just didn't feel comfortable talking about it. So first of all, discovering what it is that you feel ignited some emotion in you, talk about it with somebody, and either they might know about it, they might not know about it, they may have actually experienced it themselves, but at least you would have offloaded it onto somebody. And I hear this so much from women, and it probably happens from men too, but you know, my experience as women is they say, wow, that really sounded bad now that it came out of my mouth. Like now that I'm telling you, that sounded so much worse to me. Because when we're experiencing it, we could be mentally or emotionally abused to the point that we think it's our fault. We think that we're the reason this is happening to us, or our partner did that or said that or didn't do that or didn't say that. So you internalize guilt. You can be so emotionally abused that you doubt yourself. So first of all, talk about it. Other than that, identifying red flags is like the most beautiful part of healing, I have to admit. Like it is a gorgeous part of healing. I have learned so well how to basically just it's a liberating way to look at the world, because you say red flags can be found in friends, in your family, in your workplace, and in your relationships. But in the world of relationships is where I always faltered, and I always fell really weak into falling into like traps and feeling like I have to give more than I get, or not really recognizing those red flags. So I would say first thing is, look at your experiences with relationships, if you have any. If you don't, that's cool. We'll start from scratch. But if you had relationships in the past, look at the things that you felt were crossing your boundaries, or that you felt that you deserved but didn't get, or you felt that you gave and didn't get back. Look at them and reflect on what it is that you want in the future or don't want in the future. Once you've done that, think about your current situation. So if you're being pursued by somebody, or if you met someone and there might be something going on. Some classic red flags that are, you know, just general red flags, not the ones that you already identify as not okay with you, which I think you still should sit down, reflect on, write them down, are things like love bombing. So there's this concept within, I guess, our society that like maybe it's Muslim, maybe it's cultural, I don't know what it is, but that men have to do everything for you and buy you things and woo you and bring you into their world and do everything for you, which is not necessarily an ideal way of getting to know somebody, because what it does sometimes is mask or cover up future abusive behaviors or even current abusive behaviors, where you can be basically guilt tripped into not saying anything because they bought you that really nice perfume, or they bought you that really nice, you know, that trip, or they took you to this really nice restaurant, or they just splurge, I guess, a lot on you. They give you all their time. They make all the time in the world for you. They don't seem to have their own thing going on, so they're always available to you and they're always there. And especially if you hear things like, I love you very quickly, and you're my soulmate, you're my partner for life, like that's a red flag. You know, these are things that come with time and getting to know a person. And I think what's also important is, having reflected on your experiences, I've learned for me now, a red flag is when somebody asks me, what are you looking for in a partner? And that might not be true for a lot of people. Some people are like, no, that's a great question. But for me, I'm like, nope, like the conversation has ended for me indefinitely, because for me, I think a red flag is not understanding me before you understand what I want in somebody. So look at who I am, what I am as a person, what I do on the weekends, what I do with my spare time, how I'm doing in my life at the moment, emotionally, mentally, whatever it is, before you ask me what I'm looking for in someone. Because to me, that sounds like you're not trying to get to know me, you're trying to figure out how to be the right person for me for a period of time until you no longer be that person for me anymore. So from the get-go, these are some red flags. And then throughout a relationship, again, a lot of this is from my experience. So feeling that self-doubt, that self-esteem, self-worth going down, that can come about in so many ways. First of all, they can actually triangulate you. So what that means is there's you, there's your partner, and then there's another individual or another concept, item, whatever it is in their life that they constantly compare you to. So you could be they could be somebody that's like prominent on social media, or they could be a, you know, somebody that works in a workplace with other women, and they could talk about that woman, or they could talk about that person on social media. They could follow that girl and like all her posts, and they interact quite a lot on Instagram or, you know, on a social media platform, and you'll bring it up to them and they'll be like, yo, that girl's amazing. She's dope. She's this, she's that. And you're like, but I'm telling you, that makes me uncomfortable. And their response is to compare you. And not literally, they won't be like, she's better than you, not always, because they, you know, they're quite under the radar, but you feel like this internalized guilt and shame, and you're not as good as her, you're not as, you know, he's interacting with her more, and that makes, you know, that is an indirect comparison. You're already feeling like you're beneath that person. So whether it's their job, another woman, or, you know, for men, in the case of men, another man, you feel inferior. You feel your self-esteem is not as good as it was when you weren't with them. And then other things that I experience as well that I've noticed in other relationships as like a red flag pattern is when the priority is more on their self-image than it is on preserving their image with you. So for example, if somebody, you know, is so good to their friends, so good to their family. Let's say maybe they're not even good to their family. They're just really good to the external public, and they obviously don't treat you very well or as well as the external public. And you say to them, hey, I feel like I don't get the best version of you. I feel like you're giving that best version to the world or to that, you know, to your friends or to your colleagues at work. But then when you come to talk to me, I feel like I'm not getting that version. I'm getting a different version. If you address it that way and they say like, you know, no, you're not. And I'm, you know, I'm tired or I'm this, or they guilt trip you or they blame you or they gaslight you. And they do this persistently, but they maintain this like impermeable persona online or in, you know, in their world, but treat you really badly in secret and in private. It's a red flag, like get out as soon as you can. And I experienced that firsthand where I was with somebody who had this social media platform, and who still does have a social media platform and who does have this impermeable persona online, and we can fall for it. You know, the world falls for that. And I got to experience, unfortunately, the real person, you know, the abusive one, the angry one, the neglectful one. And when I addressed it, there was always a masking of that person in the world that he lives in. But when it was with me and directly with me and in our, you know, just us alone, he didn't care. You know, he was like, you, no one's going to believe you. You know, stop talking about me that way, or, you know, you make things up, or you sugarcoat everything that you are. You make it seem worse than it is. So they will guilt trip you. They'll make you feel like you're wrong. They'll make you feel like it's your fault. And then they'll mask all of their negative behaviors with you by being a really great person on the outside. So you have to be careful as well by looking at somebody who has like a social media following, for example, or is this great person in the community. Recognize that those people who work extra ultra hard to make themselves look like a good person might not be the best people. If you have to work that hard to make yourself appear so great to the world, there might be something they're hiding, or they might not be that person. So these are some of the red flags I've learned, but there are so many more.
I'm so sorry that you had to go through that, but I'm beyond thankful that you are taking the time to sit with us and educate other people on the red flags that they should look for in relationships, because a lot of the things that you were saying, literally the whole time that you were talking, I was just in shock, because there were a lot of things that you mentioned that I would never have thought about them being like a red flag, especially if someone's like moving the relationship along real quickly or saying I love you quickly into the relationship. I would have thought that would be like, you know, goals or whatever, like we see on social media and stuff. And also like asking someone what they're looking for in a relationship, I also didn't think that would be a red flag, but you just told us about it and like talked about these red flags in such a unique perspective, like a way that I've never like been exposed to them before. So it was like very eye-opening for me, and I really thank you so much for like taking the today and just like talking about your experience, because I know that it's like very personal. And also when you were talking about comparisons, they can really be toxic to a relationship. And you know, like from the Arab culture, I guess, like since that's what I'm exposed to, like you can like a lot of times in relationships, like you'll be compared a lot to the relatives of, you know, the person that you're getting to know, or like the mother of the person that you're getting to know. And I feel like it could really affect the relationship negatively, because you're not entering this relationship as his mother or his sister or anyone that he's comparing to you to, or even people on social media. So I definitely feel like it's very important to just like keep an eye on how that person's treating you, because at the end of the day, like you're not entering this relationship to be compared. And I think that's like very toxic, and it could cause a lot of problems in a relationship. So I'm also glad that you mentioned that.
100% it's manipulation. Absolutely. Like, yeah, comparisons, especially when they're done in a way where you're being put down, you know, I don't think comparisons should happen even in a situation where your partner's like, oh, you're better than her. I don't think that's positive. I think that's also toxic, but it's even obviously more objectively and, you know, horribly toxic to be like, oh, yeah, she's actually better than you. And, you know, showing that in their behaviors. And one thing I forgot to say is, a huge red flag is when they talk the talk, but they don't do it. So when they say, oh, you know, I'm like, I obviously love you so much. You know, I can't believe you think that, or you'd say that, like, you must not know how much I love you. I'm going to do this, 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 you know, let's say they finally set up the criteria that they, you know, that you've identified as something that you want from them, or that you want them to stop doing. And they acknowledge it and they'll say, yeah, I totally hear you. I agree. And then they don't do it. Or they do the thing that they said they're going to stop. So look at their behaviors. A person shows you how much they care about you and shows you how much they love you. They don't have to tell you. It is an action. They have to show you.
Yeah. And like, I just like really appreciated like you sharing that, because I think that in, you know, the Muslim / like Arab world, I think it's more of like a cultural thing. I mean, it is a cultural thing. There's a lot of like pressure for girls to just hurry up and get married, and you know, that you're getting too old, and you know, like all of the different mentalities in our cultures about when is the right time to get married. And I think that you know, listening to like even like other podcasts and people share their experiences like on social media and in real life, like sometimes like rushing into something just to fulfill some abstract criteria that your culture has set out for you about when you should be married can cause people to like miss these red flags. And so I really appreciate you like sharing that. Yeah. Because so many times I think people talk about like the good parts, but they don't talk about like when things go wrong, and like how can you try and make sure that, you know, as much as possible you're not getting yourself in a situation where you're going to like be abused by someone else, which is obviously not something that, you know, we can control. But I'm saying, like you were saying, there are things you should be looking out for. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're often the most abusive people and manipulative people will rush you into getting married. So they will pressure you, and it won't be a mutual desire to move forward. Cause you know, there are times, and I've seen really beautiful, flourishing, healthy relationships where things did move, I guess, like objectively quickly, like a few weeks and or months, for example. But it's like when it's not mutual. And I also had to hear that a lot, like, you know, when are we going to get married, and we need to move forward, and we need to do this. And it always felt like a conversation that was pressured rather than a welcomed open space for us to be like, okay, so how are we going to move forward? So also look out for that, that if people are pushing you and pressuring you to move forward, probably not the healthiest relationship for you. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And something interesting that you mentioned when you were talking is you were saying like, it's not just like with like relation, like romantic relationships, but also like there can be like issues of like boundaries and like not having those with friendships. So I guess in your experience or from your perspective, what are signs of toxic friends and how do you set boundaries with people who you start realizing like are toxic or who are not right for you anymore as friends?
Yeah. This is such a good question, especially as you get older, because I was always somebody that had like a million friends at all times. I was always so social, and going through, you know, lots of things in the last year or so, I've recognized that you recognize your own traits as well. And you'll be like, you know, you'll notice in order for you to feel, I guess, your best or, you know, how you're, you know, I guess to feel like you are a good friend, some people like, you know, empaths or people who are very supportive and feel the need to be there for other people and give and give and give. And that's how they feel their validation and that they're good friends. And there's a world out there that we have to recognize and learn that empathy and love and generosity are not actually common traits. They're not, you know, they're not everybody's, you know, kind of natural instinct. So when people notice that in other people, they gravitate to you, whether they're friends or partners. So in fact, the most empathetic, loving, and giving people end up in really toxic friendships or relationships, because people that are abusive will gravitate to those people and use them. So friendships are not excluded from that. So it is very common and important conversation to talk about. What are the signs of a toxic friend? I think that is a question that anyone can answer for themselves. So for me, a sign of a toxic friend is somebody who doesn't, I guess, reciprocate the support that they get from me as a friend, you know, as, you know, a friend in that circle, who isn't supportive but takes the support that I provide. So that can be draining. That can be something that, you know, drains my cup and leaves me feeling empty. And then when I need the support, it's not there. So for me, that's one sign of a toxic friendship. Another one is notice how, I guess, they respond to your boundaries. So before we think of toxic, let's say you yourself are reflecting inward and you're thinking, okay, I want to set more boundaries. I love myself now more. I'm recognizing where my limits are. Now I'm going to communicate my boundary to my friend. If you communicate that boundary and you tell them, I love you, I value our relationship, I don't want it to turn badly. I don't want it to be draining. I don't want us to harbor any negative emotions. I want us to keep this relationship going. And that's why I want us to, you know, to talk about this boundary. Notice how they respond to you. So if you set this boundary or you even have like a gentle conversation about what you do and do not like, how are they reacting? A lot of times our apologies tell us a lot about the person apologizing. So if they say like, you know, they kind of dismiss you, or they say you took it the wrong way, or they were just joking, or that's not how they meant it, or they didn't intend, or blah, 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 insert any sort of excuse, that's probably not someone that's good for you. But if they acknowledge it and say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was doing that to you. Thank you for telling me. Thank you for helping me understand you. Thank you for explaining that. I respect that you shared that with me. I love you too. And I want to maintain this friendship. I want to maintain that relationship with you. And tell me how we can do that. Like, let's have a conversation. So toxic people come in all forms, but for you, the question is, what is a toxic friend to me? Because everyone's going to have a different answer, but it's, I guess, how they respond to the way that you engage about issues, boundaries crossed, lines crossed, or things they did to you that hurt you. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. That makes sense. And I think it's like very important to realize this. And I think like sometimes we just need to sit back and like reevaluate our friendships, because we reach like certain points in our lives. And sometimes it's like we grow apart and we see that other friendships are like toxic for us and whatever it may be. And I really love how you mentioned how important like setting boundaries in friendships is, because I never realized how important they were to like keep your friendship like healthy and like fresh, just because I thought, you know, if you love that person and if they're like truly your friend and if you like spending time with them, like why are boundaries important? Like we don't need them, you know? But I feel like as we grow older and begin to understand that boundaries aren't selfish and how important they are, it'll be like a little bit more easier to like put them into practice. And I'm just like really glad that you talked about that. But I think like an important question that I was thinking about is, how do you know if you're being the toxic one in a friendship? Because I feel like sometimes when we're in relationships, whatever they may be, like we want to blame the other people for being toxic, but then we don't see our toxic traits and how we apply them to other people.
Yeah, that's an important part too. When you do recognize how to set boundaries and you start like actually actively doing that and consciously doing that, you recognize your, toxic traits, or you can name them any way you want, your weaknesses, whatever it is. How do you do that? I guess it's applying the same standard that you apply to other people in your life onto yourself. So what wouldn't you allow from somebody else that you do to yourself? Or how would you talk to your friend if they come to you with a particular issue or address something with you? How would you encourage them, advise them, or support them? Apply that to yourself. So your toxic trait can be that you constantly have this feeling that you're an imposter, that you don't deserve what you have, you don't belong in the spaces that you occupy, you're not good enough for XYZ. That can be a super toxic trait. And if you heard that in your friend, you'd be like, no, you know, here I am going to try to explain to you that you deserve these things and you don't, you know, you shouldn't be feeling that way. And vice versa, like, you know, you would want them to tell you that. So treat yourself like you would want somebody to treat you. So hold yourself accountable to those emotions, and recognize your traits as, I guess, in a standard in the world, what you want around you. Apply it to yourself, look internally and be like, no, I need to be better. I need to either bring those negative statements as positives, or those, I guess, positive statements. So for example, you're someone who's super giving, super empathetic. You don't have a cap or a limit to what you give. That can be toxic for you. That's not good for you. So bringing that back down to neutral and realizing that I can be a good positive person, but not give more than I get, and not give of myself to the point of exhaustion.
I feel like those are all very important points that we don't think about. Like, we don't think about those as being like toxic traits, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's very important to pinpoint how we can be toxic to like be able to like work on ourselves and make our like relationships better overall. I think like moving on from like friends, and I feel like as young Muslims, as maybe you know, people from like different backgrounds, whether it be like Desi or Arab or whatever, we have a lot of trouble kind of setting boundaries within our families, just because I guess how like we're taught that the family dynamic works, and that maybe if you don't do this, then you're being selfish, mm-hmm. or, you know, you're not showing as much love or things in that sort. So how, first of all, is boundary setting in your family selfish? And how can we like set boundaries within our families while still respecting our parents and not creating any bad blood, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a topic I'm so excited to talk about, first of all, but it's a little bit dangerous, because I want to like disclaimer this, because all of our families are going to be different, and some, for cultural reasons, I'm not going to attribute this to religion, because we know that it's not religion, but for cultural reasons, we have family situations that are abusive, that are dangerous, that are so toxic, they're actually threatening to your well-being. So the information that I'm going to be giving now, or the ways to set boundaries or how to go about boundaries, don't always apply in abusive situations and in super toxic households. So I don't want somebody listening to go home and say these things and then end up, you know, having consequences for those actions. So just be very cautious with how you approach them. And if you are in a situation where your family is abusing you or it's very toxic to you, please call a helpline, mental health center, get help, get support, talk to somebody about it. Because sometimes you can't do it on your own. Sometimes you really just can't set those boundaries on your own. So get the support that you need. So I wanted to make sure I said that before I start. And for those individuals that are in households that are still toxic, and we can take that, you know, into our own hands without the consequences of, you know, harm to ourselves, I would say, first of all, boundaries are not a selfish thing. They are a very, very, like, I wouldn't say selfless, because the opposite of selfish is selfless, but I would say they're a community oriented thing. They are relationship oriented, because boundaries maintain relationships. They maintain love. Without, you know, without draining love and creating, you know, a toxic kind of love, you're allowing it to be maintained long term. But if you don't do that, it could end up harboring resentment, and it could end up making the relationship falter and basically break apart in the future. So boundaries are their relationship forming and maintaining. And the first thing I would say is, in a family setting, is we as, I think, Muslims, again, I think this is way more cultural than it is religious, but in our Muslim communities, we are expected to do certain things for our parents. We are expected to be very family oriented, but we aren't necessarily given the freedom to value our time and value ourselves and, you know, use our own time. So I think first of all is recognize that your time is valuable. You are a valuable person. It's, you don't have to spend it on other people all the time. You deserve it to, you know, deserve to give it to yourself. And you deserve to do what's best for you. So within our cultural norms, you can be pushed into this like crazy, weird, alienating box that doesn't, it's not where you belong, but it's where we're pushed into sometimes. And you have to give yourself permission to be like, that's actually not what's best for me. Like, I appreciate that you think that's what's best for me, but it's not. And I'm going to go ahead and leave this box. I'm not going to stick to these cultural norms and adhere to them. I'm going to actually create my own type of world that's best for me. So regardless of whether or not your family accepts it, you kind of have to be your biggest advocate. You are your biggest advocate in a family setting where, you know, especially with Muslims, you know, being first generation immigrants, where you're the first one to be living in America or Canada, you have to advocate for yourself. And that knowing that there's no shame in that. So try not to associate guilt or shame with disappointing your parents or disappointing your family and doing what's best for you. So, and other things that you can do like on a practical day-to-day basis is limiting your time. So with the toxic people in your family that you recognize are toxic to you, is limiting your time with them and knowing the triggers that are going to happen around your family. So like anticipate those triggers. I know for me, I'm kind of somebody that's, I'm very anxious right now, especially, so I have high anxiety. So the, like the environment that I'm in has to be very sort of, I guess, neat, put together, because it will, there's too much going on in my head right now that if there's a lot going on around me, it just, I will just combust. Like, it's not healthy for me. And I live in a very Middle Eastern household where there's a lot going on. There's stuff everywhere. My parents just love to put things everywhere. Nothing is put away. Everything's left out. So I know my triggers. And I know that when I go downstairs to the kitchen, I actually have to talk to myself. Like, I have to tell myself, it's going to happen. You're going to be triggered. You're super anxious right now, and that's why you're going to feel this way. You're going to feel really annoyed by the environment, but you can't control it. The best thing you can do is do what you need to do and go back into your safe space and, you know, recognize the emotion's going to come up and recognize what it, what's within your control and what you can do about it, and then plan how you're going to respond. For me, that's such a simple little basic answer. I don't want to go into like obviously the heavier triggers that could happen in your family. So as a most simple basic level, know the triggers that you're going to experience with your family. It could also right now be they could, you know, shame you for your the way that you dress. They could shame you for, you know, the degree that you're pursuing or the job that you want. You could feel questions or, you know, attacking questions about your decisions. So like where you're going to go in life, what are you doing now? You're not doing anything. You could feel shame for not being productive. So know the triggers that are going to come up within your family. Totally understand that they come from an appropriate place. You absolutely, they're not wrong. Like the feelings that you have, sorry, not the questions, the feelings that you have are not wrong. It is normal for you to be so angry and livid at the fact that your family is triggering you in this way, but recognize what can I control? How can I best take care of myself? And how am I going to respond now? And practice saying no to your family too. Like I think recently I've been spending way more time in my room. It's like my safe space now. I've been super anxious, like I said. So I just come up here and I read my books. I'm on my laptop. I'm studying. And the rest of the house isn't a safe space for me. I recognize that. And I haven't lived at home for 9 years. So this is a very triggering experience. Like being back home has been highly, highly triggering. And my parents will be like, you know, why don't you spend time with us? Like, why don't you come sit down with us? And I'm just like, no. Like the answer is going to be no. I love you guys. And I love, you know, spending time with you and others, you know, in an outside of my current state of mind. But right now it's highly triggering. You know, the interactions are not beneficial for me. They're actually harmful. And I clarify my, you know, my need to them. And I say, I need my space right now. I need my time. And not that I'm never going to be able to sit down with you and watch TV or, have a meal or talk to you, but right now it's not good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally, last thing is with any boundary setting. So when you do communicate the boundary, I think first try to say it to your friends. So like, you guys are so lucky you have each other. If you talk to each other about a boundary that, you know, you feel comfortable, first of all, talking to each other about, mention it to your friend, mention it to somebody you trust, and be like, hey, can I just like run by you how I'm going to say this to my family? Like, let's just talk this out, especially if you know each other's families or parents or friends, whatever the situation is really. Practice saying it to someone else and they'll be like, yeah, that was actually really good, or maybe not, you know, take that part out. So practice like drawing your boundaries with someone you trust.
I think that's like really important, because especially like talking about how boundary setting isn't selfish, because up until like recently, I always thought of like, you know, boundaries are for the people that I don't like, mm-hmm. you know, I can, I guess, put them in their place, but for like my really close friends or whatever, like, I just want to like do, you know, like no boundaries. It's a free for all, but you know, it's not beneficial for my friends or family or yeah. for me, you know, like sometimes you just need, you know, whatever you're going through, you just need a little bit of space. Even if you're just frustrated about something or whatever, like, you know, being like, it's okay if my friend doesn't want to talk about this right now, or, yeah. you know, it's okay if they're not doing things that they normally do, you know, or the same thing that goes for me, even for like my family members. And I think like it's super important to talk about how it's like crucial to put boundaries, because I didn't like grow up with that mentality, and I'm an adult now. So like yeah. the fact that I just recently started like thinking about this, I feel like I should have known when I was younger, because it would have like stopped a lot of, you know, toxic friendships that I had and things like that. I just couldn't put people in, you know, their place because I didn't want to mm-hmm. lose that friendship or whatever.
Yeah. And like, I really love how you talked about this, because mm-hmm. I think it's just so, so important, especially for young Muslims to like understand this concept. Because for me, like, I wish someone would have taught me that when I was younger. And I think it's just such a perfect note for us to kind of like round off like all of the amazing tips that you gave in this episode, because like, for me personally, I didn't really like learn that like I needed to set boundaries with like the people that I loved until I like went to college and mm-hmm. I was away from them, and I didn't have to like see them every single day, and like every day I got up and like I was around completely new people, which now is gone because we're all at home. But so I think that experience was just like invaluable, because I learned like, okay, what do I need, and like what makes me feel like most productive and happiest and makes me feel comfortable, mm-hmm. and then like how is that like compromised when I'm like at home or when I'm trying to get work done at home. And now I think like the challenge is like compounded, because we're like, for a lot of people, we're still working and schooling and everything from home, so the boundaries are a lot more complex. But I think the tips that you gave in this episode are just so helpful, so I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah, it takes a long time to learn. Like, I know you just mentioned that you wish you had known them earlier, would have saved, you know, all these things, but don't, like, it's not your fault. You did the best with what you knew at that time. And I'm older than you guys, and I'm just learning it now. Like, it's hard. Boundaries are not easy. Easy to practice. If they were, everybody would do it well, but it's so hard and it's an uncomfortable experience. So give yourself that like self love and self compassion to know that you're learning and you're going to get better at it.
Yeah.
And I think like the last thing that we could briefly talk about is, you know, setting boundaries is, I guess, a form of like self-love. So how can we like become, you know, more self-confident and like start to actually love ourselves without, you know, the cliches from the motivational like social media posts yeah. that we see all the time, and like without faking it on social media? Because I always see like posts or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, but then I'm just like, okay. Like,
where do what we now?
Go? Yeah.
What now? Like, it's like, but I don't know how to apply it in my own life. And then, you know, I see like a lot of people now coming out and they're just like, yeah, like I've learned to love myself. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, it's not just a question that you pose and get an answer. It's an entire process. So I love that you mentioned that, because yeah, social media can be super annoying sometimes, where you're like, okay, but what does that mean? So I totally relate to that experience where I've read it and I've heard it and I'm like, I don't know what this means. Unfortunately, the way that I was introduced to loving myself in the process of self-love was through being in a relationship that really destroyed me. Like, I had to start from scratch and go from on the ground, really, like to nothing, to, you know, build myself up again from the ground up. So it's really good to be asking those questions yes, you know, we're all going through a lot and we're all experiencing really difficult times, but it's really good to ask that question when you haven't experienced those experiences, when you haven't been so traumatized and hurt and abused, so that you can avoid those experiences because you loved yourself, you created those boundaries, you noticed the things that made you uncomfortable, and you moved away from those experiences, like, and those people. So I learned that the hard way, but it brought me to where I am today, which is great. So the things that I did to get to this point is, self-love is not necessarily a feeling as much as it is like actions and behaviors. So in order for me to learn to love myself, I had to start doing the things that made me feel like my time is valuable, my mind is valuable, my words, my thoughts, my feelings. The first thing I did is journal. I started to journal a lot. I wrote down everything that I'm feeling. Not every day, because I didn't want it to be like a burden, but I wanted to do it as a form of relief and as a form of recognizing that what I'm feeling is important and is powerful and is necessary to be, you know, to talked about. So I journaled a lot, and I went to therapy. So the journaling kind of led to therapy, and I was like, okay, I think I really need to talk to somebody. So I went and I invested in my self-worth and who I am, and I, you know, obviously found a therapist. I also got a family doctor for the first time in life. I got like a permanent family doctor because I had been living in Australia. So I kind of like hopped around between cities and I didn't have like a permanent one. So I went online, I searched for a family doctor and I called them and I was like, I want to start at this practice. And I talked about how I'm doing. I did blood work for the first time in years and I'm a doctor. So like, I can only imagine how people who aren't even in the medical field go out of their way to do this. So take ownership of your health and how you're doing, you know, get a doctor, talk about certain things, start a start talking to somebody so they know who you are. So when you do go through something, they don't have to go through that whole history and background. They know you and you can go and talk to them about something. They're like, okay, well, that's actually different for you. You're a little bit different today. And they can go from there. Another thing I did that self-love or like that, you know, brought me to a point of self-love is boundaries. Like exactly the topic we're talking about today. I learned that I have been very negligent of myself and of my self-worth with my relationships and with my friendships. And I learned what it means like to not be negligent of myself, to value myself, create those boundaries, leave toxic friendships, leave toxic relationships, and advocate for people who are in them. So basically, you know, be supportive towards my friends or family when I hear about these things and try to advocate for them and support them and help them. Another thing I did is make myself accountable to myself. So when you want to do, let's say you, in order for you to feel like, you know, I really love myself and I really want, I feel really good about myself. Let's say I really want to be, I want to do well in this exam, or I want to do well in this semester, or I really want to work out every day. I want to eat healthier. Like these are things that would make me feel good about myself. Hold yourself accountable to them. So every single day, write down, you know, what would it take today for me to feel good about myself? I really want to eat a super healthy meal. I want to go for a run. I want to journal, whatever it is. Write those things down and actually do them. So it's hard to get started, but actually hold yourself accountable. You wrote it down that morning. You really want to close the day off and actually make sure that you did it. So you're accountable to yourself now. And spend time with yourself. The worst thing about my experience in life is that I spent a lot of it alone. Like I did 4 years of my undergrad away from home. I had to, you know, create my friendship circle and my community on my own. I didn't have anybody. And then I spent 4 years in medical school even further away from home on the other side of the world and had to do it all over again. And in that experience, I unfortunately didn't recognize the value of spending time with myself. I was so afraid of being alone. I just created like spaces where I was always surrounded by people. I was always in a community. I created like these friendships that I could always rely on. I hated being alone. And that was more damaging for me than it was good. I ended up, you know, like I said, being negligent of myself and giving too much of myself to people and not prioritizing myself. So the really important thing to do is say, I'm actually great company. I'm a great person to myself, that I don't really need anybody else to validate that for me or to make me feel like I'm having a good time. I'm having a good time by myself. So do the things that you do with other people, try them by yourself, you know, go out and get what you know, your favorite dinner or your favorite coffee, or go for that walk or go to that activity, go by yourself, go to that, you know, not right now because it's COVID, but I was always afraid of going to events by myself. Like I was like, no, I can't, like there's no way. And now I'm like, no, I'm definitely going by myself. I'm not going with anyone else. So yeah, spend time with yourself. The way that you treat yourself paves the way for others to treat you. So treat yourself with, you know, in the greatest way that you can imagine, like the way that you want someone to treat you. And also the language that you use for yourself. So the way that you talk to yourself, your inner voice, that's the loudest voice in your life. You know, we think people are louder than that, but it's not true. It's our own inner critic, our own inner voice. So give yourself like that gentleness, that love. You're amazing. You're valuable. You are worthy. You're a bright, beautiful soul. Like tell yourself every day. So, you know, give yourself affirmations as well. And that will pave the way to, you know, to loving yourself.
I think this is like very valuable information. Got me to reflect on how I don't do a lot of those things. So
how you said, you know, treat like how you treat yourself will like set the stage for like how others like will treat you. And I just like, I love that so much. I like want to frame it. But I think that's such a powerful quote for us to end on today, and to really just like encourage everyone to like utilize like the tips that you gave in this episode, and to just really truly embody loving yourself and setting those boundaries and being confident and allowing yourself to live the best life possible, and recognizing that in many ways you are in control of, you know, the life that you create for yourself. And yeah. I really love the tips that you shared today, and really appreciate you coming back as a guest on our podcast and sharing so much knowledge and being willing to be so personable and amazing. I absolutely enjoyed today with you.
No, thank you guys. I really enjoyed it too. And I hope that this serves people well, and you know, they learn from it too.
So that's all that we have for you guys today, and we really do hope that you guys enjoyed this episode and benefited from it. We really enjoyed talking to Dr. Nahla and personally learned a lot from her. And you can follow Dr. Nahla on Instagram at I'm Dr. Nahla, and TikTok, where she has some really informative ones, which is also at I'm Dr. Nahla.
And remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Real Talk Real Muslims. Share and discuss this episode with your friends or your family, or just think about it by yourself. And check out our full episodes on multiple different platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else there are podcast episodes, we have it. And there's a link in our social media bio for you to find all the places to check out all of our previous full episodes. Make sure to also give us any feedback by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, DMing us on social media, or emailing us at realtalkrealmuslims@gmail.com.
That's Real Talk Real Muslims for you.
Bye!